Laban said to Jacob, "What hast thou done, that thou hast stolen away unawares to me and carried away my daughters as captives of the sword?" Now notice here, he knows why. Why the old hypocrite? He knew why he had left. But he wants to try to get a bluff in on Jacob. I think he's trying to bluff him. Yeah, he did a pretty good job of it. Now he said, "Wherefore didst thou flee secretly and steal away from me and didst not tell me, that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs and tabret and with harp?" That's hypocrisy. Would he have done that? Why, he wouldn't have thrown a party for him. No. Done anything in the world else. So here then, first of all, there's his bluff here. And lying. Why'd you try to run off? And next, a hypocritical attitude here. I'd have given you a nice party and sent you away like you should. He's lying. He knew he was lying. Jacob knew he was lying. And now here's a third. Now he acts the part of an outraged grandfather and father. "And didst not suffer me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now hast thou done foolishly." I just wondered how much attention he had given to them when they were there. I don't know. He might have played with the little kids, the little grandkids. But he surely didn't take much interest in his two daughters. Didn't share any of his wealth with them. And "it is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. But the God of your father spake unto me yesternight, saying, take heed to thyself, that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad." Now whether he served God or had any respect for God, he at least had enough respect that he wasn't going to go against him here. God told him what to do and not do, and he's not going to violate that. You know, he's fighting against God then, although he may not have the faith in him he should. "And now, though thou wouldst needs be gone, because thou so longest to see thy father's house, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods?" Yeah, so I guess there were several of them there, little households, some of them little bitty things, some of them larger. All the way from the size of a man down to just about so big. About some of them, you've seen they found a lot of those over in different places. But at any rate, now here, I know you want to go to see your father, and I left you go. Now, they're trying to be nice now. I just don't have a bit of use in the world for Laban. I think one of the most despicable characters that you have in all the Bible. Anybody here got a good word for him? Yeah, why, speak up. Like the old lady said about the fellow couldn't say anything about good about what we said. Said, well, he whistles nicely. Trying to say something good about the devil, well, he's at least busy. So he can say something good about, I guess, everybody, but I don't know of anything good about old Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, I know he answers his questions. He answered the first one first. Why did you leave? Because I was afraid. For I said, lest I should take my daughters from me by force. That is exercising a patriarchal right of power among the ancients to retain and keep his daughters and let Jacob go. He could have done that. Jacob knew that. Yes, sir. Excuse me. Right. With whomsoever that now he comes to the other one. And you'd have taken him by force, he knew that. With whomsoever thou findest thy gods, he shall not live. Before our brethren, discern thou what is thine with me and take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. I imagine that would have been a terrible shock to Jacob to think that she stole those gods. A little old idol there. What'd she want with them? But at any rate, he didn't know that. But now that was another statement there. Whoever will shall not live. Now that's another one of those foolish statements. That's like the one that Jephthah made when he came back from the battle. Whoever comes out of my house, I'll offer as a sacrifice. And the little daughter came out. That's a thing that we ought to all study and learn. In Ecclesiastes 5, when thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he hath no pleasure in food. Pay that which thou vowest. Better it is that thou shouldst not vow than that thou shouldst vow and not pay. Remember that. So when you be careful about a vow, and I think that there's a law, that at least I interpret that law so, a law that God gave whereby an individual could offer a sacrifice in the stead of keeping a foolish vow. I believe that was included in that statement. I could find it if I had the time to look for it. That was later on in the law, of course. And Laban went in. I know if he goes into each tent separately, and that indicates each wife had her own tent, and Jacob had his. And Laban went into Jacob's tent and into Leah's tent and into the tent of the two maid servants, but he found them not. And he goes and probes around, and all of the everything that Jacob had, and everything that Leah had, and the two handmaids. Now he comes to Rachel's tent, and he entered into Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the teraphim and put them in the camel's saddle. That is some part of it that you carry things on which you can sit. And they say these saddles made a place to sit down in the tent as kind of a seat, stool. And Laban felt about all the tent, but found them not. And she said to her father, now you see a little bit of a father in her here. And she said unto her father, let not my lord be angry that I cannot rise up before thee, for the manner of women is upon me. Now it might have been, I don't know. Might have been or might not have been. But at any rate, she shows a little of that deceptive character of old daddy, doesn't she? So what rubbed off on the sons, a little of it rubbed off on this daddy, on this daughter. All right? And he searched but found not the teraphim. Now this arouses Jacob's anger and indignation. Now here's where Jacob really comes to life now. He's had all of it he's going to take. And Jacob was wroth and chilled with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that thou hast hotly pursued after me? As we would say, now hear now, or listen to me, hear. It's an emphatic idea. You pay attention to what I'm saying. What have I done that you've pursued after me? Whereas thou hast felt about all my stuff, what hast thou found of all thy household stuff? But it were set it before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us two. But we'll make them the jury here, and the judge and jury of this case. These 20 years have I been with thee. Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flocks have I not eaten. I want you to note here what he says, and it's all true. That which was torn of beasts I brought not unto thee, but according to the law of that time, if a beast slew an animal, while the shepherd was not responsible, if he couldn't get to it, beat it off. That was not held against him. Now notice what Jacob says. He says, I brought not unto thee. If it was torn, I bear the loss of it. Of my hand didst thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Anything stolen or torn, you required it mine, and you made me pay for it, out of whatever wages he was getting there. Thus I was in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep fled from mine eyes, because I was out there tending to the sheep. I was out there when they were bearing the lambs. I was staying up at night, working in the day, doing without sleep. Now what's your charge against me? These 20 years have I been in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters, and 6 years for thy flock. And thou hast changed my wages 10 times ever since these 6 years. And we decided what you'd pay me and what I'd get out of this. You've changed it time after time after time. Yet Jacob went right on. And God kept right on blessing him. Now, except the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac, he means that which Isaac reverenced, respected, and feared, had been with me, surely now hast thou sent me away empty. God has seen mine affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked thee yesternight. All right, so now then, he has no, that shows no confidence in what Laban had said. While Laban had said he ought to have had a party for it, he knows that wasn't true. He didn't even mention that. He ignores that. We know it isn't so. And here, he knows Laban is not going to do anything he said he was going to do. No confidence in him whatever. And you can't blame him at all. Right? Now notice Laban's answer, but that was a good defense there of himself, and I think eloquently stated there. And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, the daughters are my daughters, and the children are my children, and the flocks are my flocks, and all that thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto thee, unto these my daughters, or unto their children whom they have borne? In other words, yes, they are mine by relationship, but not his by right, because he had sold them. Jacob had worked for them, paid for them. And not only that, but everything the old man had was a result of Jacob's hard work. Now notice David a little, Jacob a little farther. And now come, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee. Alright? And so, because Jacob's already told him now that what you have, you didn't have anything when I came, but now look at what you have. But now why does Laban want to set up a monument here? He wants some kind of a witness or testimony that Jacob, when he gets back home and becomes even wealthier and builds a good army, a good bunch of fighters like Abraham that will come up there and take revenge. I think that's what's in the old man's mind. But I notice he said, let's make this and be for a witness between me and thee. And I know the old man said, let's do it, but he didn't move a finger. Jacob did, and Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones, and they took stones and made a heap, and they did eat there by the heap. All right? Now he sets up a stone here. They bring other stones and put around it to support this stone. And here evidently on these rocks or near there, now then they have a meal now that binds them as they mutually eat together. There's a rule among them that if they eat of a man's salt, that is, eat food in which his salt is provided, that binds you together as a covenant. Now, this is what they are doing here. And they did eat there by the heap. And Laban called it Jigar Sahadutha, which means in the Syriac language, the heap of witness here. But Jacob called it Galeed, which is Hebrew, the other Aramaic, that is the heap of witness. One is the heap of witness. There's a little difference in the meaning there, but I don't know what it was, not enough to mount anything. Called it Galeed here. And Laban said, this heap is witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Galeed, and Mizpah. For he said, Jehovah watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. Now, we've come to use that in a beautiful sense. That's not the way old Laban meant it. What old Laban meant was, may God watch that you don't come back and cross this witness here to come over here to me, and that I don't go down there. But he wasn't about to come down there when Jacob got down there and got time to build up an army. He wasn't going to come after him. But this way he meant it. Jehovah wants you to look after you. I'll not be there to keep my eye upon you. He doesn't trust anybody. So may God look after you and see that you don't come back over here. May he watch after what you do down there. That's what he meant by it. We made a very beautiful thing out of it. Jehovah watch between me and thee while we're absent one from another. That's really not the literal meaning of the Hebrew language there. But keep an eye on you. He's not concerned about himself, but he doesn't trust anybody. So he can't be trusted. Said a while ago, a fellow that can't be trusted, never trust anybody else. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, now this is an insult. Jacob had only been kind to them. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, and if thou shalt take wives besides my daughters. Oh, Jacob never had wanted but one, and that was Rachel. So if he had more than one, it was because of Laban's deceit, and because of his weakness in listening to these wives of his and taking their handmaids as concubines. No wives besides my daughters. No man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. Now that shows, you see, that's where you learn what we're really talking about. I'll not be that a watcher. Be no man that a watcher. But let God look after you there. And that's what this is a testimony to. But he knew that ought to have sense enough to know Jacob wasn't going to do that. And Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, and behold the pillar which I have set betwixt me and thee. He really hadn't. These other fellows had done it. He just claims it like he does everything else. This heap be witness, and the pillar be witness, that I will not pass over this heap to thee, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap unto, and this pillar unto me, for harm. So the old man's kind of scared of what may happen in the future. But Jacob wasn't about to do anything like that. He had his hands full with four women and 12 sons such as he had. He had a hand full with them. You come to know those boys and four wives. Well, he wasn't about to go back up there. Now he said, the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge betwixt us. Now, does that indicate that he's talking about Jehovah as the God of Nahor? Or was Nahor an idolater? For the alternate version says, or gods, the gods of Nahor. I mean, the gods of their father, judge betwixt us. And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. He ignored what he said there about the God of Nahor, the gods of the fathers. He ignores that. He swears or takes his oath by the fear of Isaac, by Jehovah, whom he serves. Now, what I want you to see in this, and what I see in it, is a strengthening of Jacob's faith. He's grown a great deal in these 20 years that he's been up there. His faith in God, and although he weakens at times, and Jacob offered a sacrifice in the mountain and called his brethren to eat bread, and they did eat bread and tarried all night in the mountain. Now here is where the Hebrew chapter changes. Now in the Hebrew Bible, 55 is verse 1, the beginning of the next, and I think correctly so. I think now then there's a new thought here, because now that's over. Now they tarried all night in the morning. All night in the mountain. So now then, his relation to him is finished now. And early in the morning, Laban rose up and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned unto his place. And Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And Jacob said when he saw them, this is God's host. And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. Now those are the angels of God. Now what does that signify? Two hosts. Who saw the angels? I think only Jacob saw them. Jacob saw them. Now, had they been with Jacob all the way, had they been with him all of this journey, I rather think so. I think so. They're ministering spirits sent forth from God to do service for the sake of them that are heirs of salvation. I'm asked the question so often, I ask it myself, of myself. In what way is God using angels now, or is he using them? My answer is, I don't know. I don't know. If angels are having anything to do with my life and the guarding of it and the directing of it, I don't know a thing in the world about it. They may be, they may not be. It did in the Old Testament. It did in the days of the New Testament. And the writer of Hebrews says, they're ministering spirits sent forth to do service for the sake of them that are heirs of salvation. Well, that seems to be that's what they were doing then. Are they still doing it? I don't know. So a man that'll argue that question, I think, is arguing a question. He can't prove either way, so I wouldn't argue with you 1 minute on it, either side you want to take. I don't know, and you don't either. So we'll just leave it right there as far as I know. But now Jacob saw that. So he had two hosts. Who are the two? The word Mahanaim means two hosts. All right? And so here was the host, Jacob's host, and here were the hosts of angels that were with him. That word also occurs over in the Song of Solomon. When this girl, the Shulamite, the chorus told her, they looked back to the time that she had been discovered and brought into the camp and told her to do again the dance she was doing. Said, would you see again the dance of Mahanaim, the dance of the two hosts? Now, I don't know what that was unless it was a folk dance that the young people did at certain times of the year in memory of Jacob and these angels that accompanied him and bring back the ancestor from up in the north. I don't know that that's so. But at any rate, she went through the dance of Mahanaim, which apparently, as she whirled around, they admired her beauty and all that, in that chapter 6 and 7 of the Song of Solomon. Well, it won't take me long to finish this next chapter. I do want to get through. We'll go through it hurriedly. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau. Now he's got another problem. He got rid of his problem with with Laban. Now he has another problem. He's going to have to meet Esau. And that really scares him. And that conscience hurting him. He'd mistreated his brother. He could have gotten the birthright and all that without doing what he did. But now he has to go back and face it. Good lesson, isn't it? There comes a time when we have to face the consequence of our deeds. It comes to all of us. have to face the consequence of our good lesson. So let's see it. And Jacob sent messenger before him to Esau, his brother, under the land of Seir. That's down in the land south of the Dead Sea and east of the Dead Sea there, the field of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, thus shall you say unto my lord Esau, thus saith thy servant Jacob. Now I want you to note, he's very emphatic as to what he wants them to say. He's not going to leave them on their own resources to what they shall say. You shall say what I tell you to say. This is what I want you to say. Well, God did the same thing with us. Jesus told the apostles, you to say what I tell you to say. And that's what you, and Paul told Timothy, as I said Sunday morning, hold the pattern of sound words which you heard from me there. And so we're to hold that pattern. Speak as the Lord, the oracles of God speak. 1 Peter 4:11. All right? Now I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. This is what you tell him now. You tell him, thy servant Jacob, I sojourned, I've been with Laban and stayed until now, indicating, I think, that he didn't intend to stay this long, but he had. And I have oxen and asses and flocks, men servants and maid servants, and I have sent to tell my Lord that I may find favor in thy sight. Now, in other words, I don't think he's bragging on what he has. I don't think he's trying to, I don't think he wants him to know, I'm not coming back as a pauper, dependent on you in any way now. Not coming back for anything. And I think that he's just using good judgment here. I wouldn't say that he's crooked or underhanded in this at all. He's sending a gift. He wants the favor of his brother. He wants this thing behind him now. I think he'd certainly like to see it done differently. Favor in thy sight. And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to thy brother Esau, and moreover he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him. Now, in other words, he didn't say anything. He didn't send me a word that he's coming to meet you. Man, that scared him to death almost. What do you have those 400 men for? My guess is he had been out, he was conquering this land, Edom was, Esau was. And maybe he'd been on one of those, battles there, or tours there, what it might have been. Because it was too far for him to go clear on down to the land of Seir. They met him somewhere between them. And maybe he had heard Jacob was coming and he was coming. But at any rate, he doesn't send him any word at all. You know, no comment from Esau. He's on his way. Right? Then Jacob was greatly afraid and was distressed. And he divided the people that were with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two companies. Right, now here again you have your Mahanaim. Here was first the company of himself, his company and the angel host. But now then, here are the two companies here of his own people now that he divides into. And he said, if Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the company which is left shall escape. And Jacob said, now notice his prayer, and it's a fervent prayer. O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, O Jehovah, who saidest unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will do thee good. Now, here is faith in prayer. God promised it. Now, he's calling on God to keep. However, there's sort of a weakness there in that he knows God said it. He believes God's going to do it. But you know, folks, there's something about this thing. Just like old Abraham. Abraham, when God said, I'm going to make of you a great nation and all that, well, he believed that. Believe that. But when he got out into Egypt and needed God's help right now in protecting his wife against Pharaoh, he wanted to do it himself, didn't he? Same thing when he went into the land of Gerar, same thing there. You know, we can get up and preach these things and all that. Yes, I believe God's going to raise me from the dead. I believe he's going to give me eternal life, and I believe that. But you let me come face to face with something right now. That's when the test comes. Now, it's true of Abraham, it's true of Jacob here, and it'll be true of you and me. Alright? So he prays, I am not worthy of the least of all the loving kindnesses and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, And now I'm become two companies. All I had was my staff. Now then, look how you blessed me. He gives God credit for all that. That's wonderful. That shows his faith. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and smite me, the mother with the children. Smite me, and the word and could have been there, and the mother with the children, smite us all. And thou saidest, I will surely do thee good and make thy seed out of the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitudes. That's for faith in God's word. All he has to rely on. God said it. He must rely on. But at the same time, and here's a point I think is true, class. When God promises and I depend on that word, I must make every possible provision that becomes my lot. And that's what he does. I must do that. So must you. Make every provision that falls becomes my lot to provide. And he lodged there that night and took that which he had with him, a present for Esau his brother, 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milch camels and their coats, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 she-asses and 10 foals. Now, that was 580 head. Pretty good little bunch of animals, isn't it? 580 of them. But now notice how he puts them one at a time. Here was a distance between them. That just showed good judgment. And he delivered them into the hand of his servants, every drove by itself, and said unto his servants, pass over before me and put a space between drove and drove. And he commanded the foremost, saying, when Esau my brother immediate thee and asketh thee, saying, whose art thou? That is, now hear the sheep, the thing go before, you lead them, and here they come. Who are you, and who are these? And whither goest thou, and whose are these before thee? Now here, again he tells them exactly what to say. Then thou shalt say, they are thy servant Jacob. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau, and behold, he is also behind us. And he commanded all those second and third and all that followed the drove, saying, on this manner shall you speak unto Esau when ye find him. In other words, now, this is what you must say. They wanted to say the same thing here. There be no, don't you change this. And you shall say, moreover, behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with a present that goeth before me, and after it I will see his face. Peradventure, he will accept me. Now, this is what he wants. He wants to soften his heart to receive him. And I think Jacob was genuine in this. He wants to give him his present. He wants, of course, his favor. This is what he wants. So the present passed over before him, and he himself lodged that night in the company. And he rose up that night and took his two wives and his two handmaids and his 11 children, and passed over the ford of the Jabbok. Now, he didn't go himself, but he provides for them, and they go across now. And he took them and sent them over. Now, notice he sent them over the stream and sent over that which he had. And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him under the breaking of the day. Now, this has given a great deal of concern to Bible students. I think Hosea, the 12th chapter, verses about 3 and 4 may help us. And this is a good commentary, at least, on it. Turn to 12th chapter, verses 3 and 4. Let me go back to that. Verse 2. Jehovah hath also a controversy with Judah, and will punish Jacob according to his ways, according to his doings, with a recompense. Him. In the womb he took his brother by the heel, and in his manhood he had power with God. Yea, he had power over the angel and prevailed. He wept and made supplication unto him. He found him at Bethel, and there he spake with him. Even Jehovah, the God of hosts. Jehovah is his memorial name. In other words, this angel is the same one that he had met at Bethel. And if God, it's the angel of Jehovah, and what it actually symbolizes. Now, how much of a physical wrestling took place, I don't know. What it was the struggle that went on in the heart of Jacob as God is testing him and trying him here to prove his faith here. I look at it, and I wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, that's Jehovah, prevailed not against him, he still hasn't broken him down yet. He touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was strained as he wrestled with him. So this angel is the angel of Jehovah again, representing God here in the struggle that he has with Jacob in trying to make of Jacob what he wants him to be. It's been a hard struggle. God had a struggle there with him all the way through. And he said, let me go, for the day breaketh. That is, I think, the angel said that. And he said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. And he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. Which meant, back in the 27th chapter, verse 36, supplanter, you remember? Where it means supplanter. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel, for thou hast striven with God and with men, and hast prevailed. Right, now hear this rest, and that word strive there in the Septuagint translation, the Greek translation, back to the Old Testament, is the same word that you have in Luke, the 13th chapter, and I think it's about verse 26 or 7 along there, when Jesus said, when the fellow asked him, are the men of the city to strive to enter in by the narrow door? Same word. A vigorous, strenuous effort. So here was a wrestling, a struggle here to bring the physical Jacob, the old fleshly Jacob, under submission to the spiritual. I think what it was. Now that's the struggle you and I must make. I think Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, when he fell on his face and prayed fervently there, I think he was bringing the human into submission to the divine, the physical into submission to the spirit there. I know he was the Son of God, but he was man and God. There's where he brought the physical, the human into submission to the spiritual, the divine. I have the same conflict. I must have the same wrestle with myself and have through the years, and so would you. The only thing, sometimes we don't recognize it. And so here, this wrestling here indicates to me at least the struggle that God is having with Jacob to bring himself into the place of perfect faith and a perfectly spiritual life instead of and dependence upon God instead of the self-sufficiency of the past. Now we've seen that growing all the time, haven't we? We've seen that developing. But now it's reaching here something of a climax. Now, it doesn't mean he wasn't called Jacob later on. He was. But the old Jacob comes out in him every once in a while. But the Israel prevailed. You've striven with God and with men and have prevailed. And Jacob asked him and said, tell me, I pray thee, thy name. Of course, Jacob already knew that. He knew who he was wrestling with. And said, wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name? What do you want to know for? Why are you asking? And he blessed him there. Gave him the blessing. That was the answer to his request there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, that is, the face of God, for that's what he'd seen there. For said he, I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. That is, no man can see God and live. That is Jehovah himself. This is the one whom God sent. Just as in Jesus Christ I see God. Jesus said in John 14, he that hath seen me hath seen the Father. How sayest thou? Show us the Father. So to see Jesus is to see the Father. They've seen him. They saw the Father in him. But no man looks upon God himself. Yes, sir.
That's the question he asked. Why do you ask my name? You know my name.
Yes, sir. You know who I am. Yeah. Why do you ask? You know who you've been wrestling with. You know who you've been wrestling against all the time. Been God all the way through. Yeah. Why do you ask that? So he didn't tell him that. And the sun rose upon him as he passed over Penuel. I think that has the same meaning as Peniel there. And he limped upon his thigh. Now, whether he limped the rest of his life, I don't think we are told. Or whether it lasted a few days, or went back into place, or hunted up a good chiropractor and had it put back in place, I wouldn't know which he did back there. But at any rate, he was limping now and carried that as a memory of that contest. And maybe he was lame all of his life. But now notice the next thought. Therefore the children of Israel eat not the sinew of the hip, which is upon the hollow of the thigh under this baby, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh in the sinew of the hip. That indicates to me that that continued with him, though I have no way of knowing, but I think that it did. Well, those are three interesting chapters to me. Chapter 30, here you see the unhappiness of a polygamous home there, and you also see the birth of 11 of the children of the sons that became heads of the tribes. Chapter 31, you see faith in God more predominant there, as Jacob first determines to leave. Then Laban pursues him and comes upon him. Then they make a covenant there that neither one will pass over to the other for harm. And I don't know that Jacob or any of his family ever saw Laban or any of his family after that. I doubt if they did, though we're not told. And that, then here is the covenant that they made. Now then, he goes on his way. Now in this chapter here is chapter 32, which I think is one of the great chapters of this of Genesis. Yeah, because here you have Jacob now, as he wrestles, or God wrestles with him in an effort to make of him what he wanted him to be all the time, the rightful father of the people of faith. But the Lord had a pretty big job with old Jacob. He had a pretty big job with all of us, doesn't he? I think he does, to bring us unto that place of a perfect faith in God, perfect submission to his will, in which the Israel comes out instead of the Jacob, instead of the supplanter. Let it be the one who strives with God and man and prevails in a spiritual way. The other question, I've got about 2 or 3 minutes. I can tell you all the rest that I know in those 2 or 3 minutes. Anything else you want to know? Question. Anybody else, sir? That's right. He knows that. No, that hadn't been settled yet. No, it hadn't been settled with either one. It hadn't been settled with Esau nor God. And it had to come to a showdown. That's why I had to face it. And he worked it out all right. Turns out good in our next chapter. All right. We'll meet again next Tuesday night. Same time. Thank you for coming. Let's see how many we have. Son, will you count them for us? You count. Walk down there and count them, will you? Just walk down the side there and get them. I think you have to do that to get all of them. It looks like about 20, 25. Yes, sir. I mean the Roman fall? Well, the other 586. He was destroyed in 586 by Nebuchadnezzar, yes. Then in 70 A.D. by the Romans. How many have? How many? 26. You count? Oh, we got one back on. You count him? In the room back there. 27. I might have given. We had 27 at church. I did Oracle Sunday night. We were just real proud of that. Thank you for coming. The class is dismissed. Did you count me? Count me? Oh, you didn't? Well, that's 38 then. Good. Well, we're going to have to get somebody to count high, and you can, mister. Thank you, son. Thank you. Glad to see you. Holy Father in heaven, we're so thankful to thee for this lovely day that thou hast given us a light and help, for the disposition of mind and heart to be here tonight for this study. We're thankful for the Bible and all that it means to us, for the great lessons that it teaches us, for the revelation of thyself unto us through it and thy great will and purpose. As we study tonight, give us the wisdom and the grace that we need to understand, to comprehend, and to put to practical use the things that we learn. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, our closing study last Tuesday night, Jacob was preparing
to meet Esau. He had been separated from his brother for practically 20 years, about 20 years. How would his brother receive him? He had gotten the birthright, gotten the blessing that Esau felt should have gone to him, the firstborn, and would, except it was not God's will and purpose. But Jacob had deceived his father, and had also, I think, bought off his brother in a bad circumstance. So how would his brother meet him? Well, he prepared these herds and flocks, about 580 head altogether, sent them on ahead in different groups, and told the men with each group to tell him when he met him that these were a gift from Jacob, and Jacob was coming to meet him. Then you recall that he spent a night across the Jabbok wrestling with the angel, which I think was symbolic of the great struggle that went on within himself. Here is a wrestling between the Israel and the Jacob, the two natures in this man. And I think we have the two natures in most of us. There was Jacob the supplanter, there was Israel that wrestled with God and prevailed. And of course that took place that night. So he'd been preparing himself to meet his brother. Now in our lesson today, why he meets his brother, he sent those groups on ahead. So we had 30, 31, and 32 last time. We come to 33 tonight, which he meets his brother here, and it turned out to be a very pleasant and wonderful meeting. I think that we can attribute that to prayer. Jacob apparently had prayed earnestly about this meeting, that it might turn out better. Now, one thing that I trust that you and I have noticed as we've gone along had been the growth and the development of faith on the part of Jacob. I think we see a growth and a development here. And that wrestling with the angel was something of a turning point, or maybe a climax, or reaching a height in this growth and development of his faith in God. Now, we've seen that in those chapters as he got ready to leave Padan Aram and go back home, his faith in God. Now, it's grown a great deal, though he has always appreciated the spiritual things, though he was a weak individual. We've seen that in him. All right, so chapter 33 now, his meeting together with his brother. And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, and with him 400 men. Now that had been reported to him, that Esau was coming with 400 men. When they met Esau and told him about Jacob's coming, Esau didn't respond. He didn't make any kind of response at all. Whose are these? Who are the four? But made no comment as to what his attitude toward Jacob would be, or his reaction to meeting him. So when they came back and told Jacob, Jacob had no idea how this meeting would turn out. Probably, it might be with these 400 men that he had been out. How long had it been since he had left Canaan to go in and take the land of Seir there, south of the Dead Sea? I don't know. We'll deal with that later on in our lesson tonight. Maybe recently, I don't know when it had been. But evidently, he was carving out a nation for himself. God had promised him he would make it in the nation. We'll read that after a while. They were probably, he'd been on some kind of a foray and a conquest, and now he heard Jacob was coming and come to meet him. And he divided the children unto Leah and unto Rachel and unto the two handmaids. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost, and Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph hindermost. Now, Rachel was the real true love of Jacob. And he shows his partiality and shows that here in this, but he does put the handmaids first, then Leah, then Rachel.
And he himself passed over before them, and bowed himself to the ground 7 times, until he came near to his brother. Now in those Tel El Amarna tablets that had been discovered in that area, this seems to have been characteristic of one paying homage to one that he considered higher than himself 7 times. Now we know that in the Hebrew culture, 10 was a perfect number. I mean, 7 was a perfect number, complete full number. So he manifests that, bow 7 times, himself here 7 times, until he came near to his brother. And Esau ran to meet him, and embraced him, and fell on his neck, and kissed him, and they wept. Ah, what a change, really, I think, from what Jacob was really looking for. A really wonderful meeting. I want to make this observation. I think that in that prayer of Jacob the night before, and no doubt, he had been praying before that, concerning his meeting with Esau. I think this change of heart in Esau, I think we can say it was a result of prayer. That God changed it in answer to the prayer. Now how he did it, I don't argue that question. But inasmuch as God teaches us to pray concerning these matters, pray for your enemies, and to pray for one another, I believe God answers prayer. I don't have any patience with the brethren who pray and they say, yeah, pray, but they don't believe God answers the prayer. We got a lot of brethren that feel that way about it. That they pray, well, why do you pray? Well, God said pray. Well, why did God say pray? There's either something to it or there is nothing to it. I think there's something to it. So I would be willing to conclude and do conclude that this change in him was the result of God changing him in answer to the prayers of Jacob the night before and no doubt many times before that. And he lifted up his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, who are these with thee? Now remember that they've been separated 20 years. Apparently, he had heard, learned nothing. Wasn't that right? Yes, 7 and 7, 14 and 6 or 20. And apparently,